This is VOA News by a remote. I'm Michael Brown. The Democrat-controlled U.S. House of Representatives is moving to impeach President Donald Trump. House Democrats accuse him of enticing an insurrection after last week's deadly storming of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Dozens of Trump supporters have been arrested after the attack. Five people died in the mayhem, including a police officer whose death is being investigated as a homicide. The House Majority Leader says the House could vote Wednesday on the impeachment resolution. Even if Trump has already left office, a Senate impeachment conviction after his term ends could mean he would not hold federal office again. Trump has refused to concede his defeat or congratulate President-elect Joe Biden, but he has acknowledged there will be a new administration come January the 20th. Concerns are growing that the rampage at the U.S. Capitol last week by extremists supporting President Trump may be the start of violent protests across the country leading up to the inauguration of President-elect Biden. The FBI said in a bulletin that it has received information about unidentified, or rather identified, armed group intending to travel to Washington, D.C. on the 16th of January. The FBI says they have warned that if Congress attempts to remove Trump via the 25th Amendment, a huge uprising will occur. While not commenting on the specific threats, other government agencies are taking steps to bolster security. The Department of Homeland Security announced Monday it is directing the U.S. Secret Service, normally tasked with presidential security, to start its inauguration security operations this Wednesday, 6 days earlier than planned. For more information, join us at voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick said on Monday night that he will not receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In a statement, Belichick said remaining true to the people, team, and country that he loves outweighs the benefits of an individual award. The Super Bowl winning coach did not say explicitly that he had turned down the offer from President Trump. Although he describes himself as apolitical, Belichick wrote Trump a letter of support during the 2016 presidential campaign that the candidate read aloud at a rally in the days before the election. The Trump administration redesignated Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism, a move that places new sanctions on Cuba shortly before President-elect Biden takes office and could complicate any efforts by the incoming Biden administration to revive the Obama-era détente. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the designation Monday, citing Cuba's continued harboring of U.S. fugitives and its refusal to extradite Colombian rebels, as well as its support for Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro. The designation reimposes major restrictions on Cuba, including barring most travel between Cuba and the U.S., as well as the transfer of money between the two countries. President-elect Biden got his second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine on Monday, completing his inoculation against the deadly disease. The president-elect, who responded to questions after his inoculation, said the increasing number of deaths is wrong and we can do a lot to change it. Vaccinations across the U.S. have been uneven and have not gone according to the Trump administration's plans. Biden's transition team plans to vaccinate as many people as possible with their first shot rather than save the vaccine for second doses. Officials at the World Health Organization said its efforts to investigate the origins of the coronavirus are not about finding somebody to blame, as the agency sends a team of international experts to China this week. It was not immediately clear, however, if the experts would be allowed to travel to Wuhan, where the virus originally emerged in late 2019. Also Monday, China announced 103 new COVID cases, the country's biggest jump in infections in more than 5 months. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, via remote, VOA News.
America from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 12th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Facebook shuts down several accounts belonging to Ugandan government officials ahead of Thursday's presidential election.
They have not told us the nature of the complaint, even to say we are going to switch you off. And so it is a double standard. And that ties very, very well with what our intelligence is telling us, that some of the opposition is working with foreign interests.
Ugandan journalists await a court decision on Thursday on the power of the Uganda Media Council to accredit journalists. Zimbabwe authorities arrested spokesperson of the opposition MDC Alliance, and the battle lines are drawn in Ghana for this Friday over seating arrangement in parliament.
By convention, the parties that constitute the majority normally will sit to the right-hand side of the speaker at the chamber. But as we speak, no party constitutes the majority.
And the Red Cross says COVID-19 vaccines should not lure people into a false sense of complacency. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has shut down several accounts of the network in Uganda linked to the country's Ministry of Information. The social media company accuses the network of using faked accounts to promote the ruling party and the president. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
The Facebook accounts shut down were allegedly linked to the Citizens Interaction Center at the Ministry of Information and Communications Technology. In a statement, Facebook accuses the account holders of using fake and duplicate accounts to manage pages, comment on other people's content, impersonate users, and reshare posts in groups to make them appear more popular than they were. Duncan Abigaba, the deputy head of the center, says their accounts were targeted because of their support for Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM. Abigaba says the action by Facebook is unfair since members of the opposition National Unity Platform Party, led by singer-turned-politician Bobi Wine, have been using social media to promote Wine's presidential candidacy.
So NRM had tried and sell our candidate as well in the social media space. So by selling the candidate, it means you have to employ different tactics, including you put out content, and this content, you must share it in different groups for it to have as much reach as possible.
The Uganda Communications Commission wrote to Facebook and Twitter late last year, demanding it shut down several accounts it said were being used wrongly by members of the opposition National Unity Platform. Government spokesman Ofwono Pondo says the commission received a response from Facebook saying it would investigate the claims. But instead, says Opondo, without any due process, accounts of NRM supporters have been shut down.
They have not told us the nature of the complaint. They have not written even to say we are going to switch you off. And so it is a double standard. And that ties very, very well with what our intelligence is telling us, that some of the opposition is working with foreign interests.
The Ugandan government is already disabling some social media platforms currently, unless one is using a virtual private network. Videos on Facebook cannot be played. The Uganda Communications Commission has also ordered app stores to block over 100 virtual private networks being used by citizens to bypass the blockage. Joel Senyonyi, the National Unity Platform spokesperson, denies the party has a hand in the account shutdowns.
We actually wish we had a hand in it. We'd actually love to see all the government accounts blocked because they're using them to justify all the ills that are happening. You know, that people get killed and then you see government officials and regime apologists and functionaries go on social media and then they justify the killing of people and so on.
Ugandans go to the polls Thursday with Museveni seeking to extend his 34-year run as president. Bobi Wine has called off his final campaign appearances due to multiple arrests and police breaking up his rallies. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Supporters of Uganda's ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, are accusing Facebook of bias ahead of the presidential and parliamentary elections. This after the giant social media group shut down accounts belonging to the party, which it says are being used to manipulate debate before Thursday's presidential election. The ruling NRM party says Facebook is violating the country's constitution, which it says guarantees free speech. But the country's opposition parties welcomed the decision to freeze NRM-related accounts. Galbert Tumushabe is a lawyer and prominent Ugandan civil rights activist. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that Facebook has every right to freeze any account which violates its policies.
We know that the ruling of the NRM has a very, very comprehensive and well-manned media operation that is doing some of these, sending out calls of these accounts. And therefore, I think it's proper for Facebook to be able to really sanction some of these people who are doing the kind of work that has been done. My view is that as long as the owners of these accounts are misusing them, I think Facebook and other social media platforms should have the responsibility to be able to sanction these kinds of people and stop the spread of misinformation. And I think that also should be on all sides, because I know that they also a number of people on the NUP side, especially, who have also been trying to compete with NRM on spreading misinformation.
Some people are suggesting that by closing the NRM account, basically the NRM supporters are saying that it shows that Facebook is biased and supporting the opponents of NRM, including FDC, NUP, and the rest, and that it is not fair to create such an imbalance in the run-up to the elections. What is your take?
Facebook doesn't know how the NRM regime operates. But for me, who is a Ugandan and a taxpayer, I know that the NRM uses my money as a taxpayer to be able to employ the horde of social media activists to be able to do the operation that they are doing. So in other words, why I sympathize with them on the question of bias, I would also challenge them and say all of them who are engaged in this work, some of them are actually public sector officials. These are public servants paid officially by Ugandan taxpayers, and they are busy running NRM operations. So they are not, they would be the last group of people to complain about bias, because what they are doing is essentially wrong from the onset.
Now, an advisor to President Museveni is asking the Uganda Communications Commission to act to ensure a fair digital playing field. Basically, some also are accusing Facebook of undermining Ugandan constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech. What is your assessment on this?
I can tell you that the NRM people can be the least people to accuse anybody on Facebook. The NRM regime has basically interfered with every other candidate, both presidential and parliamentary, who wants to appear on radio stations across the country. We have candidates who go and pay for airtime to be able to appear on local radio stations. And before they appear on these radios, the NRM government sends security people to shut down the radio station. Some of the candidates have been shut down when they are already in studios. So we cannot be the group that claims the freedom of speech, freedom of the media, because they have been, their onslaught on media freedom in this country has been profound. And therefore, I sympathize to them. I think that Facebook has rules. As long as it is applying them fairly, I cannot sympathize with the NRM regime because of what it's doing in this country.
Galbert Tumushabe is a lawyer and prominent Ugandan civil rights activist. He spoke with VOS Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Ugandan journalists are awaiting a ruling this Thursday, the day of the presidential election, over whether the Uganda Media Council had the authority to accredit journalists for Thursday's presidential election. Pius Katunzi is a member of the Uganda Editors Guild.
The Uganda Media Council, which is an organization that is created by the law being Uganda Press and Journalists Act, issued some directives sometime back in December requiring all journalists who are going to cover the elections and who are going to cover the campaigns to be accredited by Uganda Media Council. This was strange, and we thought we should go to court so the court can determine whether Media Council has got the mandate or no mandate. So we said through the Uganda Editors Guild, we decided to take the matter to court because we felt, number one, that the Media Council is not fully constituted. It's supposed to have, I think it's about 10 members, if I recall well, but it has got fewer than that. That's number one. Then number two, the actual enrollment of journalists is supposed to be done by NIJU, which is defunct now, but that is not done. So legally, they are not constituted to accredit journalists, but they went ahead and they imposed or arrogated themselves that duty. So we wanted court, first of all, to impose an injunction. As we hear the main application being that the decision of the Media Council was unlawful, irregular, and unfair. So today, when we went to court, court could not grant us the temporary injunction, which we sought, because basically the events have moved on in the sense that some journalists went ahead and registered, and then also we are going to have the elections on 14th January. So imposing an injunction on that wouldn't make sense in the view of the judge. So they decided that, okay, if it couldn't make sense, then we got with the main application, that is a judicial review intended to determine whether the actions or the decision of the Media Council was lawful or not. So that's where we stand. And then the judge will give his ruling on 14th January, that is on the election day, at midday through email.
Pius Katunzi is a member of the Uganda Editors Guild. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 12th. Zimbabwe authorities on Monday arrested opposition MDC Alliance spokesperson Fazeya Mahere and charged her with publishing or communicating false statements prejudicial to the state. She had posted on social media a widely circulated video which shows a baby allegedly killed by a police officer's baton stick while strapped to its mother. Mahere tweeted that police had beaten the baby to death while enforcing COVID-19 lockdown rules. The police said the information is false. Mahere is the third person to be arrested for publishing or communicating false statements, according to the government. Clifford Latwayo is the deputy national spokesperson for the opposition MDC Alliance.
Advocate Fazeya Mahere, the national spokesperson of the MDC Alliance, has been arrested today in the morning around 9 a.m. by law and order officers. The police are then charged with spreading falsehood. That is the same case that the investigative journalist Hope Oshongono was arrested for, and the national deputy chairperson of the MDC Alliance, Honorable Job Wiwa Sikala, he was also arrested on that matter.
If I'm right, Mahere is the third person to be arrested for what the government calls false information. I was asking whether there's any evidence about this killing of the infant that was mentioned by Hope Chigono and now by Mahere. Is there any evidence that they can show to the public?
This is a victimization of leaders of society. This is a clear sign of a government that fears its people. The video of that police officer fighting with the people is all over in the social media, is everywhere. You know, it's not a secret. What is being said by people is not a secret. And everyone saw the video circulating, and there were people, many people at the bus terminus. So it's not about that we as the MDC Alliance or the journalists were talking from Norway, you know, they were commenting on the video that was circulating on social media.
So what does the party intend to do now? I mean, are you going to go to court to seek Maher's release?
There is a legal team that is working on it. We are working with the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. They've got a pool of lawyers that are working on those cases. So they are concentrating on that. And our legal team, you know, led by our Secretary for Legal Affairs, is focusing on that. But what is very important is that at this juncture, as Zimbabweans, as a people, as Africa, we need to draw a line in the sand and say enough is enough. Because what is happening right now is a clear declaration of war by the government against its citizens. It's a declaration of war against the ordinary people, against the poor. Because if you look at the things or the things unfolding here in Zimbabwe, it's a matter of who is who in terms of if you are a ZANU-PF person, you are immune. If you are an MDC sympathizer, or as MDC member or a leader, you are vulnerable to police brutality. You are vulnerable to arrest.
Clifford Latwayo is the deputy national spokesperson for the opposition MDC Alliance. He was speaking with us from the Zimbabwe capital, Harare. In Ghana, the battle lines are drawn for this Friday over which party should sit on the right-hand side of the Speaker of Parliament. Ghana currently has a hung parliament as a result of the December 8th general election. The ruling New Patriotic Party, the NPP, has 137 seats, and the opposition National Democratic Congress Party, the NDC, also has 137 seats. There was a near fist fight last week when NDC members sat on the right-hand side, the majority side. Now, the NPP said it is determined to stop the NDC this Friday. Honorable Roxanne Nelson Bafiamo is a member of parliament for the opposition NDC.
We have a hung parliament now in the Republic of Ghana. My party, we have 137 members. The party that's constituting government now also has 137 members of a 275 membership parliament. As you may be aware, we have one independent member of parliament. Now, when we were inaugurated on the 7th, we have elected speaker as well as his two deputies. And the independent member has become the second deputy speaker. So that is where we are. Now, by convention, the party that constitutes the majority normally will sit to the right-hand side of the speaker at the chamber. But as we speak, no party constitutes the majority. So as part of the feud or the misunderstanding that you may have heard of was the fact that we are occupying the right side of the speaker in parliament. And the party in government told that that is not where we ought to occupy. Because during the life of the last parliament, they were occupying the right-hand side. And our position is that, yes, you occupy the right-hand side of the speaker because you constituted the majority. In the life of the 8th parliament, you don't have the majority. So you cannot determine where you should sit. So once we have decided to occupy the right-hand side, then they must, as a matter of consequence, occupy the left-hand side.
So to you, the opposition, it's a matter of first come, first serve. Now the ruling party is saying that it will not take it anymore. Come Friday, they are going to be sitting on the right-hand side. What should we expect on Friday?
Well, this is simple parliamentary praise by precedent. We are going to ask the speaker to make a determination. On the first day of the life of this parliament on the 7th, where were you sitting? The side occupied by each party should prevail because I will not agree to the fact that I will be asked to move to the other side of the house. You will be doing so if you have a more numerical advantage than me. You don't. So there's no other basis for you to go sit on the left-hand side when you are no more than me in terms of the numerical strength.
When you sat the last time, on whose side did the independent candidates sit? Because the ruling party is arguing that the independent candidates sat with them, so therefore they should have the majority.
I think they are misconstruing the constitutional provision underpinning where the independent candidate can do. He cannot join them in parliament. He can occasionally vote alongside them if he is minded, but he cannot declare that he's joining. If he does that, then he will suffer the similar fate that he suffered in November when he abandoned his party and went independent. So he was sacked from parliament.
Do you think this is the right way for the ruling New Patriotic Party and you, the opposition? This is the right way to do the people's business?
Well, we have always cooperated with them. If they are not willing to cooperate with us, that's their business. But we are ready to work and move the interests of the country forward. If they are threatening to, because of where they sit in the house, they will not be willing to conduct the affairs of state, it will be scandalous.
Honorable Roxanne Nelson Dafiemakbo is a member of parliament for the opposition National Democratic Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that COVID-19 vaccines should not lure people into a false sense of complacency. It says vaccines alone will not end the pandemic. People must remain vigilant and continue to practice public health measures. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
COVID-19 vaccines are being rolled out in a number of countries around the world, giving rise to hopes that the pandemic will soon come to an end. The International Red Cross Federation's Director of Health, Emmanuel Capobianco, views vaccines as an important tool to stop this dreaded disease in its tracks. He tells VOA immunization drives are a matter of life and death, and that countries which have the vaccine must increase the speed and scale of inoculations.
We need to vaccinate more and more and more people and as fast as we can. For those countries that don't have the vaccine, it's important that there is a push from the international community to bring those vaccines in as fast as possible. While this happens, though, and we cannot wait for the silver bullet to arrive, and we need to take the precautions that can save lives.
He says these include basic preventive measures such as physical distancing, wearing masks, isolating when sick, and going into quarantine when coming in contact with an infected person. Capobianco says these actions are particularly important now as the epidemic is infecting and killing people at a rate not seen since the beginning of the crisis a year ago. He notes global cases are averaging 800,000 a day, including 15,000 deaths. He says these spikes appear in part to be driven by the emergence of two new COVID-19 variants in Britain and South Africa. He says the variants are more contagious than COVID-19 and more people are getting infected. Fortunately, he notes, the new strains do not appear to decrease the effectiveness of the vaccines. He says the new variants have now spread to more than 40 other countries, including in Africa.
That is something that will need to be watched very, very closely because somehow Africa has been affected less than many had predicted by this pandemic so far, and we would hope that Africa could still see lower numbers of cases and deaths, but the indication is that numbers are increasing.
Capobianco says everyone should look forward to being vaccinated against COVID in the near future. In the meantime, he urges people to remain vigilant and protect themselves. He warns the entire world remains at risk from this disease until all countries receive the vaccines in a fair and equitable manner. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's it for this Tuesday, January 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans. Brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.